and thank you for tuning into the Stuff I Heard podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peek. And it's Saturday morning. We had a tremendous storm last night that shook the house. Lots of lightning, lots of thunder, lots of fun activities going on outside. And so this is Stuff I Heard. Let me tell you about some stuff I heard. This past week, I have stumbled across a podcast by Katie Sackhoff. For those of you who don't know, Katie Sackhoff has sort of surprised everybody lately because most people don't know who she is. She has been in a ton of things that, again, most people don't know about. She, where's her filmography? Da, 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 da. I think I first remember seeing her in Riddick, which was a Vin Diesel spinoff from his first movie, which was Pitch Black or something like that. Katie's around my age. She's 43. She's, I guess, sort of tall for women in Hollywood. She's 5'6", which isn't extremely tall, but I guess it is for women. But yeah, Chronicles of Riddick. She was in that group that was hunting down Riddick in the show, which is Vin Diesel. For those of you who haven't seen the show, Vin Diesel was supposed to be this bad guy, murderer guy who basically just did whatever he wanted, killed who he wanted, and, you know, was sort of the focal point of the show. But he was also arrested as a prisoner, and they put him in jail, and then he was supposed to, like, save the planet because he had just this crazy ability to kill things. So not only was he in Chronicles of Riddick, but he was in Riddick, she was. And I thought she was great in it. And I thought, wait, I've seen this lady in something else. Well, at the time, she was also starring in a show called Battlestar Galactica, which she did for 6 years. Now, I never saw Battlestar Galactica. I am assuming that it was another Star Trek, Star Wars type series. There's a lot of people that watched it. It was on TV for 6 years. On The Big Bang Theory, they had a fantasy moment with Howard Wolowitz where he imagined that she was hanging out with him in his bathtub. And she even addresses the fact that, "I'm not really here. I'm at home with my husband. You're just imagining I'm here." And he was like, oh. She also appeared in Longmire, which I haven't seen, but the main character, Timothy Oliphant, was in The Mandalorian. He played the sheriff. You guys might recognize him from a lot of different things. But it was kind of cool to see them both pop up in The Mandalorian, because for a lot of fans today, they only know her as playing Bo-Katan Kreese on The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett. She is the, I guess, the heir to the throne, if you will, to be the leader of Mandalore. But I've been a fan of hers since early on, partially because she was an attractive lady, but also because she always played these really dominant women-led roles where it was like, I'm not here to make any excuses for being awesome. Like, I'm a strong, confident person, and I'm here to lead my group, and I will. And I was like, I kind of dig that. I dig that. It was a transition in Hollywood for a while where everything was solely led by strong men, and you only saw men. And anytime you saw a woman, she was in a weak position. And I thought, well, that's not really reflective of my life. I don't have weak women around me. All of the women in my life were strong and confident and capable people who, despite all the odds, would do whatever they had to do to get the job done. And I wanted something depicted on the things that I watched that had that type of character, because that was more real to me. And so when she came out as like the leading lady or the leading star of a show, you know, I was like, well, good for you. It's awesome. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't not watch Battlestar Galactica because I didn't like the show. I never saw the show. I didn't even know where it was available. If it was on anything that I was watching at the time, any channels that I had available to me, I probably would have watched it because I like science fiction stuff and I like her. But never did see it. So anyway, I did watch her in a interesting series called Another Life. And I spoke about that on the podcast here before. I really liked her character. I liked her lead on this. And I thought that that show could turn into a modern version of like a Star Trek show where you're not really focused on who the people or aliens or characters are because it doesn't matter. The show is that good. And I thought they were turning that into that show, season two. Season one wasn't really that great, but season two, I thought, wow, you guys are really taking this in a different direction. And I like where it's going. And then it just went away. Just two seasons and that was it. But now playing Bo-Katan Kreese, there is an endless opportunity for her to portray this character because of her history with working on Rebels and Clone Wars as this character. Now, a lot of this love for her stems from her playing this character as a voice actor when it was an animated show. And my brother, Alex, really tried to get me to watch the show when it was on TV. And I was busy and I didn't care. And I was like, yeah, it's a cartoon, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then I watched it and I take everything back. He was totally right. It was awesome. If you're into Star Wars, if you're into this story, if you're into who these characters are, go back and watch some of this stuff. Again, I've said it many times. If there's any of the episodes where they're underwater, dealing with underwater people, just skip it. It's so stupid. And none of those have anything to do with the overall story or the plot, and nothing moves. It's just an episode, a filler episode of them underwater. But everything with her in it is very good. Everything centered around her or her sister, Satine, or Obi-Wan, or any of the interactions with Ahsoka, fantastic. Dave Filoni created the characters. Anyway, all of this has to do with the fact that Katie has now started a podcast. It's called Blah, Blah, Blah. And I listened to the first episode. It was just sort of her getting her feet underneath her and talking to her engineer, producer guy. Sounds like they may have had a relationship at one time, but now they're happier that they're not together. But they're on this project together, which is weird, but whatever. You know, I guess you prioritize and you move forward in life, and this is one of those situations. But it was interesting to hear her position on how things got started. Basically, she was called in and did some voice work, and she says, I think I got called in because people were fans of Battlestar Galactica and my character on the show. And then when I came in and I read the parts for what needed to be done, they just kept inviting me back and they kept writing more for my character. And I don't know if it was because of me or because of the fact that my character was named after Dave Filoni's wife. And he wanted to showcase more of her. And so maybe that's it. Maybe, listen, sometimes luck and timing has everything to do with everything and success. Okay. Sometimes you just get a break. And it sounds like she just got a good break and rose to the occasion and did the right thing. And in her second episode, she does one with Dallas Bryce Howard. Now, Dallas Bryce Howard is fascinating in herself because of the path that she took. Listening to them talk together, though, is weird because it's like a Hollywood conversation in the fact that they're both really trying to pump each other up and tell each other how great they are. And, oh, no, you're the greatest. No, you're the greatest. Oh, no, I love you. I love you. And it was like, okay, come on, just whatever. I'm used to listening to comedians who talk about, dude, you're funny. Okay, so, and then they have the conversation. Like, it's, I guess the Hollywood pampering is a little different than comedian friendships or relationships. There's a little more ego involved, which, I mean, let's face it, if you want to become an actor, it's not because you're comfortable in your own skin. It's because you feel more comfortable being somebody else than yourself. it's more fun. It's more exciting. It's easier to be someone else than it is to be yourself. My youngest son, Jacob, was an actor in high school and was a phenomenal actor. I didn't expect, so you have kids, right? And you try to help them learn to navigate life as best as possible while also trying to figure out your own crap. And you try to, you know, help them out in things that they're interested in. And I knew that being a man, being a young boy growing through high school, I felt really uncomfortable. I didn't know who I was. I didn't feel like I belonged in any certain group until I established the fact that I could make my own group. I started recognizing that people were constantly moving to our area, and I could just go up and be nice to people who are new. I could just go up to them and say, "Hey, my name is Josh. Where are you from? What's your name?" "Oh, really? I've never been there. What's that like?" "Oh, well, here, let me introduce you to so-and-so." And I became sort of a social butterfly, even though I had a stuttering problem. I felt socially awkward. I have always felt like I'm overweight. I have been overweight most of my life. But I had a knack for being friendly. I had a knack for making friends, and I didn't realize that I did. It all started with making one friend, and then you make another, and then you make another, and you have a group. And then that group helps inform you about who you are, right? So I didn't see my kids really doing that per se, but I was like, listen, in high school, there's two things I wish I would have done that I think would have helped me in life. I think they would have helped me overall figure out who I am. And the first thing is I probably should have taken ROTC as a freshman, and I probably should have been in drama. Now, what you do besides that, I don't care. But I felt like ROTC is going to help you understand a little bit of structure. It's going to introduce you to some people who are maybe looking for the same thing as young men are. And drama is going to help you break out of your shell and become friends with other people and maybe figure out a way to express yourself in a healthy manner, in a way that you wouldn't ordinarily. And it's going to introduce you to some people who are very interesting within themselves. It's going to, the people who are taking drama, in my experience, were always very, very outgoing, very creative, very willing to try something new to see if it has a reaction. But they were always very intelligent. They were always thinking about things in different ways, which all of the kids, all of our kids were. All of our kids were very smart. All of our kids had a curious mind. And they dealt with different pressures and anxieties differently. And I thought, well, these things will help them. And so my youngest was the one who really took to drama. And so much so that in the 4 years he was in high school, they created a Drama 5 program just for him and a few other kids that really went above and beyond what the drama program gave them. He was often called back to do things for other groups, to do skits for the orchestra's production of something or for the faculty for something. And it's weird to see your kid do something at that level because, you know, you think, oh, well, my kid's going to be up there and be a version of me and sort of be clumsy and functional and all this other stuff. And it wasn't that. From the first moment I saw him up there, he embodied the character he was playing, and he was bigger than the stage. And I didn't know how to say it the right way then. And I still don't know how the right way to say it, but he had command of the audience, and I would forget that I'm watching my kid. It was my son, and I would watch him own the stage and the attention and everything. And then when it was over, like he's on this high, he's on this endorphin run of people going, "Oh my God, that was so great." And you could see in his eyes, like he was so stunned that he even got through it. because of there's so much memorization and there's so much of your mannerisms and the things that you do on stage to portray this character or whatever. And these are plays, right? This is not acting like on a screen or whatever, but then he would be my kid again. And as a kid, he was still that same socially awkward kid who really didn't know what to say and didn't know how to act and didn't know what to do. And we would have long conversations about all sorts of things, mostly me talking. Imagine that. But I asked him one time, I said, how can you get on stage and do this and portray this character so well that I'm in the audience and I forget that I'm watching you and I'm into this character now. And then we're sitting here today and I can't get you to string together three words to express yourself simply. And he told me, he said, well, I've thought about that. And if you thought, of course you have, because he would think about a lot. He would overthink things, which I guess he gets from me. That's fair. But he said, when I get to play this character up there, I know exactly what they're supposed to say, how they're supposed to say it, and how I'm supposed to feel about it. When I'm me, I don't have any instructions. And I thought, yeah, that's true. None of us do. I got to thinking about this recently, listening to this podcast, listening to Katie interview Dallas Bryce Howard. And listen, there's a lot of information in that podcast that is really good. They talk about her history, her life, her mom's a total badass. but I thought about Jacob and I thought about the fact that, you know, we're all versions of each other. We're all trying to figure life out. We're all trying to have the answers, have something to do, something to say, something to give back, something to be worth, right? We're all trying to find what we're supposed to say at the right time, and we often fail. When you're an actor and you get the opportunity, you try to deliver. I've always heard that term. You try to deliver because basically you're delivering your lines. Katie made a point that when she did Battlestar Galactica, they had a very short budget. They didn't have a lot of time to film and they had, you know, limited resources. And so she says that she accredits her success on the show to the fact that she could deliver scenes in one take or one or two takes, that she could memorize her stuff and deliver on screen and they could move forward. And all I could think about was my kid. All I could think about was Jacob. All I could think about was the fact that for 4 years of high school, I got to watch him become other characters and also be my kid. And, you know, how fast time flies and I'm amazed I haven't seen him do more with that. You know, you get older and you move forward in life and you do other things and other interests. You have other interests and stuff like that. And life takes over and all of that. But maybe there's some element of that that makes me really appreciate good acting. And when I see it, I'm just amazed. So shout out to Katie Sackhoff on your podcast. I hope it does well. There's a third episode out. I don't think she's interviewing anybody. I think she's just talking. It's a weird existence to be an actor, especially in today, especially to be a leading woman. I mean, the industry itself just doesn't, I mean, it's starting to, but in general, it just doesn't back women being leads oftentimes. And in real life, it does. In real life, there are women leaders, and there needs to be more of that. So, all right, let's talk about something else. There's a TV show called The Bear, and it's on FX and also Hulu. I guess Hulu owns FX, which is weird because they're both owned by Disney now, or partially owned by Disney. But yeah, you can't watch this stuff on Disney. It's only on Hulu. But if you've got the magic of the Fire Stick, you can watch anything. And that's what I did. I watched it on the Fire Stick. Shout out to my buddy, Josh Treadaway, who is always helping me how to figure out technology to my advantage. So, yeah. So anyway, The Bear. Let's talk about The Bear. The Bear, here's the rundown on Google. Okay, I just want to read you this. A young chef from the fine dining world comes home to Chicago to run his family's sandwich shop after a heartbreaking death in his family. A world away from what he's used to, Carmi must balance the soul-crushing realities of a small business ownership, his strong-willed and, I don't even know this word, recalcitrant. Is that the word? What is that word? I don't even know what that word is. That's the craziest word. I'm sorry. Hang on. Let me figure out this word.
Recalcitrant.
What? Hang on. I got the Google telling me what it is.
Recalcitrant,
which means having an obstinacy. Why do they got to use big words to explain big words? Just talk like a person. Jesus. Two synonyms for recalcitrant. Headstrong. Why couldn't they just say headstrong? Unruly. Willful. Recalcitrant. All right. See, that's how we learn. We learn big words here at the podcast. I just learned that one with you. I'll never use the word recalcitrant. There I go using it again. Anyway, let's back up. Carmi must balance a soul-crushing realities of owning a small business ownership realities of a small business ownership, his strong-willed and recalcitrant kitchen staff, and his strained familial relationships, all while grappling with the impact of his brother's suicide. Because that's the shocker, is the sandwich shop was ran by his brother and his brother committed suicide. As Carmi fights to transform both shop and himself, he works alongside a rough, rowdy, around the edges crowd kitchen. God, my dyslexia is all over the place in this page. That ultimately reveals itself as his chosen family. Now, this show... this show is amazing. First off, just above and beyond everything else I'm going to say, the cast is incredible. Season two, we get to see some flashback imagery of these characters as younger people. Johnny Bententhal plays his brother who committed suicide. Ebon Moss Bachrach plays his cousin. They call him cousin all the time. He's incredible in this. The whole cast is incredible. His sister is played by Abby Elliott, which when she talks, she reminds me a lot of Katie Kulko. It's that Midwesterner blonde. Just the mannerisms, though, and the way she speaks reminds me of the same way that Katie Kulko speaks. But the staff in the kitchen is amazing. His mom is played by Jamie Lee Curtis in a flashback sequence. The episode is called Seven Fishes because they're supposed to go home for the holidays and his mom is cooking a seven fishes dinner. And his mom is crazy. There's no nice way to put it. She's crazy. She drinks too much. She smokes too much. She cares too much. She's scatterbrained. She has serious depression issues. So the thing I wanted to say about this is Jamie Lee Curtis has the best performance of her entire career as their mom in this episode. This episode made me panicky. This episode made me sweat and be afraid and have strange flashbacks, not of my mother, but of people that I've been around that have been like this character. And at no part watching it did I think, wow, Jamie Lee Curtis is great as this character. I couldn't take my eyes off of her or my ears because she's so loud in the scenes. But I kept thinking, wow, this mom is really going through some crap, man. And Jesus, the family's trying to navigate her, and they did their job better than I'd seen on a ton of things. I mean, I've seen a lot of TV, a lot of movies. The Seven Fishes episode hit hard. I mean, other than John Mulaney, you see John Mulaney as a character that's come over for dinner, and I guess he's part of the family or whatever. But the entire time I saw him on screen, I was like, man, John Mulaney really blends in with the family well. I mean, look at him. He looks great. I can't believe he went to rehab. This is awesome. Is he drinking? Is that alcohol? Like, I kept thinking about John Mulaney. But other than John Mulaney, the rest of the family, you're just like, this is a family. Especially Jamie Lee Curtis, okay? I didn't know it was Jamie Lee Curtis until I saw the credits. That's how good she is in this. Like, it is phenomenal to watch her portray this mom who's having a breakdown while she's trying to cook dinner for her family. And the family dynamics are interesting to see them go through the steps that they're going through. The cousins, Maddie and I don't know what his brother's name is, the Facts, F-A-K, that was their last name. They're hilarious. They're talking, it's a flashback scene, so they're talking about buying baseball cards and trying to resell them to make money and get somebody to invest in them. They got a crazy rich uncle who apparently has some ties with the mafia, who's, it's interesting because he loves the family and he doesn't want them involved in anything that he's doing. But they're always trying to hit him up for money, or some of them are. Ebon has a flashback. His cousin, Richard has a flashback of, you know, them with his bride or girlfriend or whatever. She's pregnant, going to have a daughter. Every episode was a moment where you stop thinking about the actors. You stop thinking about who they are. The main guy, Carmi, is played by Jeremy Allen White. He was on Shameless. He's an incredible actor. Almost every scene that he's in, you can hear his thoughts. That's how good of a scene catcher that he is. He's in it so deep that you can't keep your eyes off of him. His chef partner, Sydney, is played by, I don't know how to pronounce this, Eben. God, why can't I read? Edabiri. Edebiri. A-O is A-Y-O. A-O Edenberry. I don't know. I hope that got that right. I'm sorry. I don't know how to pronounce your name. Your name's Sydney on the show. You'll always be Sydney no matter what you play from now on TV, because you're owning this role. This is an incredible role for you. Marcus is the pastry chef. He goes overseas to Amsterdam to learn how to make really crazy pastries. Will Coulter plays that character who's teaching him. And it's interesting because all these actors are popping up on the show because they're fans of the show. Bob Odenkirk pops on the scene, and I guess he plays their uncle. I thought he was their dad till they started listening to the conversations, and I was like, no, wait, he's the uncle. Oh, no, wait, maybe he's not the uncle. Maybe he's dating the mom. I don't know. He's crazy. Listen, the whole cast is just amazing. Okay. But there's moments that pop up in this. There's words on plaques that get mentioned and looked at a lot. And in one of the kitchens right below the clock, it says every second counts. Richard goes to work. Carmi makes him go. I can't even call these people their real names. I got to call them who they played on scene because they portrayed those characters so well. So Carmi makes Richard go and work for a high-end restaurant. And from what I understand, the high-end restaurant is owned by their aunt. And Richard is looking at it as punishment because when he shows up, they make him put on a uniform and they make him just clean forks, polished forks. And he's pissed off that he has to do this. And he's just polishing forks. And he's like, this is so stupid. And he can't get out of his own way to realize that he's part of something bigger. And he's talking to this guy about it. And he's like, you know, I'm just going to polish forks. And he goes, yeah, and if you're lucky, next week you get to move up to spoons. And he's like, what? Spoons? He goes, maybe knives. I don't know. We'll see. But you got to do these forks first. The whole interaction of that episode with Richard is the thought process of whether we realize it or not, we are all in the service industry. No matter what our job is, we serve other people. We serve ourselves sometimes. But we get greater satisfaction from serving other people than we do serving ourselves. And sometimes in order to serve somebody well, you have to do a 10,000 man hours of the small things before you can appreciate the big things. You have to learn to walk before you run. You have to do each little thing so that every big thing matters. Everything you do matters. What's the phrase? The way you do anything is the way you do everything. And they showed that. They showed the little details. They showed the fact that at his house, he was waking up late. The alarm clock's been going off and he keeps hitting the snooze alarm and he goes into his kitchen and the house is a mess and everything's everywhere and he's sort of a slob. He's not taking care of himself and his clothes are disheveled and his car is a piece of crap and he's just slumping through life and taking up space. And so he's going to polish forks and keep polishing forks until then he starts making some changes. He starts dressing better. He puts on a suit. He calls it a suit of armor. He looks good in a suit. He starts cleaning up his house. He starts waking up before the alarm clock. He starts cleaning up his car. He starts showing up early. He starts staying late. He starts realizing that the service element of it is actually making him happy. And he has a conversation with the same guy in the restaurant. And the guy tells him, he's like, before this, my life was a mess. And I got to a point I didn't want my life to be a mess anymore. And I came here and I was willing to do anything for nothing as long as it meant that it gave me purpose. And that purpose ended up being my life. The way you do everything is the way you do anything. So this statement and the statement of every second counts is true. It's true in the service industry. It's true in life. It's true in your day-to-day life. How do you treat people? How do you address people? How do you approach your day? Do you take care of yourself? Do you make your bed? Do you brush your teeth? Do you feed yourself? Do you go out of your way to hold the door for somebody? Do you do the little things when nobody's watching? Do you look at problems that are coming up and take care of them before they're a problem? Or are you constantly just running around putting out fires? I had a conversation with a guy and I was making a point that someone we work with I wanted to get him a fireman's hat because I said he's really good at putting out fires. And he said, you know what I like better than firemen? Smokey the Bear. Because only you can prevent forest fires, right? The idea is I would rather someone be proactive than be constantly having to jump through crazy hoops to put out fires. And I agree. And then I realized I'm Smokey the Bear. The reason that I wake up early, the reason that I can't go to sleep at night is because I'm constantly thinking about what needs to be done so that there isn't a fire. Not a physical fire, but a metaphysical fire. The thing, it's an example, okay? What could be problems? And I'm trying to put those problems out. I'm trying to put those fires out before they become fires. I'm trying to prevent them. I'm constantly thinking, well, I need to do this so this doesn't become a problem. I need to do that so that doesn't become a problem. The thing about being a fireman is you're always on fire. The thing about being Smokey the Bear is you can never put out all the fires ahead of time. There's always something that you're not thinking about. There's always something that's not being taken care of. But you can try. We can all try. And none of that makes me happy. The being prepared part, the being on fire part, none of that. None of it. The small moments of happiness are when the problem arises and you already have the solution. That's the happiness. Or you see the thing that you thought was going to happen and it happens and you go, okay, well, I planned for that to happen. There's a small element of happiness there. What makes me the happiest, I think, of all of it is that other people depend on me to be Smokey the Bear. When it works, it's really cool. And no one understands why. I have moments. I have people. We network, right? We find other people that are like us. And we share different dialogue. We share different thoughts. So when something comes up, you go, I know, this is going to work. Watch this. Just sit back and watch this. This is going to be cool. Right? So, The Bear Season 2, I can't say enough about it. The acting is great. The writing is great. Everything is great. Even when you think you're just watching filler, it's not just filler. It's informing you of the overall story of who these people are and what they're doing and where their position is and how it all intertwines with each other for when it counts. And at the heart of it, what makes us all great together is when we find our people and we create our family. And then you get to watch that family do well. And there's nothing better than pumping up your community and telling them, man, you did great. Look at you. You did awesome. I can't believe you pulled it off. That was so great. It was amazing. I wish everybody could experience that. So, that's it for this week. I hope everybody's doing well. I know some of these podcasts, I ramble. This is sort of therapy for me. If you guys haven't figured that out by now. Some of these are just trying to get the things in my head out. Some of these are sharing things that I've learned, and all of it is hopefully going to inform someone someday that they're not alone. So, y'all take care. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, share this with your friends, and as always, cue the cow.
Cue. cow. Moo, baby.